You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up, some Republicans in Wisconsin say lawmakers should overturn Wisconsin's 2020 presidential election results. Assembly Leader Robin Voss points out that they can't, but made a claim of widespread fraud after a meeting this week. We'll get all the latest. Now it's time for Food Friday. Our guest is a chef who likes to get creative in the kitchen, really creative. Mayonnaise and garlic bread, cottage cheese and smoothies, rosemary and cinnamon rolls. We're talking about some unexpected secret ingredients that make basic recipes more exciting. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a secret ingredient that you use in something? In everything? How did you figure it out? Do you have tips for shaking up old recipes, making them something different? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Kelly Senye is a chef and founder of JustATaste.com. Her new book is called The Secret Ingredient Cookbook, 125 family-friendly recipes with surprisingly tasty twists. Kelly, thanks a lot for joining us today.
That's a mouthful, Rob. I know.
It is, but it really tells the story. I know what the book's about from that title. Now,
No one will have any questions, that's for sure.
Well, I have lots of questions. Now, you've got kind of these counterintuitive things you wouldn't expect. Can you tell us about your approach to cooking?
Absolutely, Rob. So I am a mom of three little ones, and I have a fourth one on the way. And I think I speak for a lot of people, whether you have kids or you don't. We're all kind of getting these cooking ruts where we don't want to be making the same thing over and over again, especially with, you know, the pandemic. It's like we're stuck at home, we're cooking more. So we get bored. You know, I make the same three pasta dishes on rotation. So when I was developing the concept for this cookbook years ago, it all started with a secret ingredient chocolate chip cookie recipe, which you can find on justatase.com. It's been made by millions of people from every corner of the globe, and it is hands down the greatest chocolate chip cookie you will ever have. I don't know if you're a chocolate chip cookie person, Rob, but okay, they're soft and chewy in the center, and then they taper off in these incredibly crispy edges, and they're just the perfect consistency, the perfect amount of sweetness. And I achieved this recipe by actually taking a portion of the butter out and swapping in my secret ingredient, which is cream cheese. So it lends tanginess and moisture and contributes to a really great crumb within the cookie dough. And so it all started with that one recipe. And then that spun off into 124 others, which became the secret ingredient cookbook. Yeah. So it's a really great way to use pantry and fridge staples. There are no weird ingredients. You're not going to have to go buy something on Amazon or track things down that are, you know, $32 for an ounce of a spice. It's all ordinary stuff, but just used in really creative new ways.
Yeah, for each recipe in the book, now you've got the recipe and then you note what the secret out of the ordinary ingredient is. Now I'm trying to picture your method here, and in my head you're just like, okay, I'm gonna make this stew. Well, I'm gonna try allspice. No. Bacon. No. Collard greens. No. You're just going through the alphabet. I assume you've got a more systematic approach than randomly trying stuff though, right?
As a professional chef, so we learned, like when I was in culinary school and worked in test kitchens, like you just, your palate develops. And then you also start to see like there's patterns within ingredients and things that maybe the average home cook wouldn't pick up on, but like, you know, introducing pistachios instead of walnuts or like just, it started with small tweaks, but, I have to say, Rob, these were not all home runs. The biggest thing about the book, which I'm crazy about on my site as well, is everything is tested. All of these recipes were actually tested by home cooks across the country to make sure that they could be replicated 10 out of 10 times and you achieve the exact same result. Because I'm a big believer, if you spend time and money on ingredients and making a recipe, it has to work. So that being said, we had a lot of comical failures. Probably the most notable one, my dear husband, this was during the major like work from home era, right at the start of things in March 2020. I was in like hardcore recipe testing phase. And I'll never forget, he was working in his office and we were working on the cocktails chapter. I love cocktails. I love wine. And I was like, oh, we are going to do a pickle juice margarita. We're going to get the salty brininess and it's going to complement like the smokiness of the mezcal. So I make this cocktail and I was like, I'm not going to try it. I'm just going to run him a taste. It was 8:30 in the morning. Not exactly cocktail time. And so I just had a straw full of this liquid and he was on a conference call and I was like, open your mouth. And he squirted it into his mouth and he starts gagging. So he has to put his call on mute. He's like, that is, I won't say the exact words, but he's like, that was horrific. And so I was like, okay, note to self, that one's not going to make it into the book. So it was a lot of trial and error, which was super fun. And as a chef, you're always looking for fun new combinations. So it was really fun to come up with these recipes. And these 125 are like the best of the best. I have a whole rejects folders of recipes that were fantastic, but just didn't make the cut.
Talking to Kelly Senier on this week's edition of Food Friday. Her new cookbook is called The Secret Ingredient Cookbook, 125 family-friendly recipes with surprisingly tasty twists. That gag-inducing margarita, not one of the 125 recipes. Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Oh, she just dropped as we were going to. Kathy, where'd you go? Well, we've got a comment, though, from Chris in Adams, who says, try using red and white balsamic vinegar instead of just regular wine vinegar. Those are things I do like to use. And as it happens, one of the recipes you gave to us is a dessert with balsamic vinegar, strawberry galette with whipped cream. What's the balsamic vinegar doing there, Kelly?
Oh my gosh, you could not have highlighted a more perfect recipe. I'm a major sweet tooth person. You make this galette, and there's actually fresh rosemary in the galette dough. Galettes are super easy. I always say they're like a really unfussy, rustic version of pie. So if you love the idea of a quick, flaky, buttery homemade dough with fresh fruit that gets that like syrupy, thick consistency, this is the recipe for you. So it actually gets balsamic vinegar mixed in with the strawberries. And so you get this sort of tanginess that lemon as a citrus and kind of that acidic component doesn't provide. But it's like just elevates it. And strawberry and balsamic is such a great combination. Totally unexpected, but that is top three favorite recipes in the whole book for me. And that rosemary, get a hint of that earthiness. It's so good. It is a home run, especially as we head into berry season.
Okay. Now we've got Kathy in Catawba. Kathy, hi.
Hi. A secret ingredient is so simple, I feel almost embarrassed calling about it. But it's a coleslaw mix that you buy like from a bulk food store. You're supposed to mix it with salad dressing and when you make coleslaw, but it's got a little bit of sugar and a little bit of salt and a little bit of other spices in it. And I use it in soups and vegetables, even in like scrambled eggs. And years ago, my uncle taught me that anytime you cook anything with tomatoes, you use a little sugar.
Okay, a couple ideas there, Kathy. Thanks for that. Let's start with that second one, tomatoes and sugar. I think I'm seeing a theme here, Kelly, something acidic and something sweet with it.
Balancing that flavor profile. Exactly, Robin. That's like lesson one, day one in culinary school is all about finding balance within taste and within those different flavors. So it's interesting she mentioned sugar with the tomatoes. So like when you're making a homemade marinara sauce, adding sugar is a great way to kind of offset some of that strong acidity that the tomatoes give off. And so I actually have a recipe in the Secret Ingredient Cookbook that's for my penne arrabbiata, but the secret ingredient is strawberries. So you get this combination of fresh tomatoes and fresh strawberries, and the natural sweetness from the berries elevates the flavor. You get a little bit of heat from crushed red pepper, and then that natural pectin too from the fruit helps thicken the sauce. So it's a slow simmer tomato sauce made with tomatoes and strawberries, and it is incredible and out of this world.
Thanks again for that call, Kathy, at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Aaron now in Salem. Aaron, hello.
Hello, good afternoon. So some people may have heard of this before, and my kids certainly love our secret ingredient chocolate cake. It's got pureed beets, and I'm a big gardener, so I've got beets on hand in the summer. I puree that and freeze it, so when everybody wants a birthday cake, they get the secret ingredient chocolate cake with pureed beets.
All right, I got to ask, Aaron, because I'm the lone beet enthusiast in my household. Nobody else will touch them. Are they really that stealthy, or are you really going to taste the beet in this chocolate cake?
No, you don't. I mean, it adds an earthiness to it, but you really don't notice it. The chocolate is a complimentary flavor, and it's
excellent.
Very good. And, of course, it adds a little bit of fiber. The other thing that I like to sneak in that my wife knows is my secret ingredient is I put liquid smoke in a lot of different things, including caramel espresso bars.
Ooh, that sounds really good. Aaron, thanks a lot for that call. So the stealth veggies in desserts, Kelly, what do you think?
I love that idea. So when I having little ones, like you're trying to squeeze in veggies whenever you can, right? So I'm all about it. And I really love the liquid smoke idea too that Aaron just mentioned. My mom Noni does these incredible baby back ribs. Obviously liquid smoke is a great ingredient for those, but it has such an intense, powerful flavor. I mean, a little bit goes a long ways, but I absolutely love it. But yeah, I do scones with shredded zucchini and chocolate chips to get a little bit of, you know, more veggies in there. You know, there's a ton of, you know, bananas and peanut butter sandwiches. So peanut butter cookie sandwiches, I should say. So there's a ton of ways to kind of get fruits and veggies in there in creative ways too.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Chef Kelly Senier about her new book, The Secret Ingredient Cookbook, featuring lots of recipes with, yes, secret ingredients. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you make something that has a twist, an unexpected item that shows up in maybe an otherwise pretty common recipe? Why do you do it? Where'd you learn it? What does it do for the final product? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can find recipes from Kelly over at WPR.org/Food Friday. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday conversation with Chef Kelly Senier about her secret ingredient cookbook, where every recipe has a surprise guest ingredient. You can join in with yours at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Kelly, before we go back to our callers, we've got a recipe here that includes champagne, and it is not in the cocktail section. You gave us a pancakes with strawberry syrup. Where does the champagne get into the picture?
Absolutely. So and you're picking all the highlights here. This is great. So pancake batter, the key is you want something light and bubbly that helps aerate the batter. When you're making tempura batter, which is a Japanese batter, you add club soda. So anything with carbonation helps lighten the batter and make it really crispy and crunchy. Well, we don't want super crispy and crunchy for pancakes. We still want them to be tender. So you actually add a bit of champagne to the pancake batter, and then you can have a little bit left over for mimosas then. So it helps to lighten the batter. Champagne also has a very yeasty undertone in terms of flavor. So it almost makes them taste like sourdoughy, but without all the time and stress it takes to baby a sourdough starter. So champagne and a pancake batter, I'm telling you, it works.
You can find that recipe at WPR.org/Food Friday. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Lynn is with us in Eau Claire. Lynn, hi.
Hi. I've never been on the radio before.
Well, congratulations. You're on now. What do you want to share with us, Lynn?
Hey, my kids love lasagna, and whenever I make lasagna, if I'm going to use 1 pound of ground beef, I do 1 pound of shredded carrots, and I saute them along with the onions and the ground beef, and then make tomato sauce, and I get carrots in my kids.
Excellent. And does it change the flavor much, Lynn?
Not at all. It pairs so nicely with ground beef. You can do it in like chili or anything that's like with a tomato sauce kind of thing. If you're using ground beef, use a pound of carrots. That's just a given in my family, and they love it. They love it. They love it. Lynn, and they share it with their friends, and it's great.
Thanks so much, Lynn. That's an interesting one, Kelly. Ground carrots with our ground beef and things like lasagna.
I love that idea because carrots also have a natural sweetness and can really get disguised as like a meatier, earthier flavor. So that's brilliant. I'm going to write that down. Book number two.
Thanks for that call, Lynn, at 800-642-1234. Before we check out another recipe, Kelly, let's talk about just kind of your philosophy. How can we do this at home in our kitchens? Do you have thoughts on how we can quest for that unique twist on a recipe on our own?
Absolutely. So I would say to just take a good look at your spice cabinet. Spices are a great place to start. A lot of times we find that we have even more spices than we know about. My spice drawer is a hot mess. It's a cluttered mess of I don't know what. But in writing and developing all the recipes for the book, it really gave me a chance to kind of explore some of those spices that I didn't use on an everyday basis, but are still really common, like ground cinnamon or allspice. I made a roasted tomato salsa that's in the book, and I used allspice in it. And it just adds a certain level of spiciness, honestly, and just this kind of earthy undertone that pairs so well with tomatoes. Same thing with cinnamon and curry powder. I do a crab rangoon with curry powder, which is really fun. So just kind of start in the spice drawer. Don't get overwhelmed by it and just kind of tweak things. You know, if a recipe calls for cinnamon, try allspice. Kind of small tweaks you can make off the bat until you get a little more confident. And then you can kind of go from there.
And then I think we've all had this moment in the kitchen, Kelly. This is pretty good, but it needs something. Do you have advice on kind of a diagnostic test to run to figure out what that something is?
That's a great question, Rob. I love that question. And I would say, I think sometimes people are afraid to salt their food. I think unless it's a dietary thing and you're trying to go low sodium, a lot of times a quarter teaspoon of kosher salt can completely transform a dish. So rather than go crazy and adding additional spices and trying, you know, acidity and everything else, start with just a quarter teaspoon of kosher salt, give it a good mix, and then go from there. But acidity being said, some of the recipes in the book too, you'll notice, are finished with vinegars or a squeeze of citrus. That's something I always encourage people to do too. I do a sweet potato and a beet hash, and it gets finished with a drizzle of red wine vinegar. A lot of times that punch of acidity after cooking, so you don't want to add the vinegar or the acidity while cooking, but afterwards, brightens the whole dish, brings it all together. And then in that case, you don't really need to rely on salt as much.
Back in my early days of cooking, Kelly, like in my 20s, I think I was known, my signature flavor was bland. and the two things were what you just said, a little more salt and vinegar at the end. Those were life changers for me in my cooking.
Absolutely. Those two small tweaks will change dishes entirely.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Barbara is with us in Mundelein, Illinois. Barbara, hi.
Hi. I was just going to suggest doing with zucchini something similar to the carrots.
Yeah. What kind of things does zucchini show up in for you, Barbara?
Well, you can put it in a lot of things, cubed or shredded. And then also I make like a hash brown kind of a thing, but you have to kind of squeeze the water out.
Yeah.
But it can work.
Now, do you do like hash browns just zucchinis, or is it potatoes plus the zooks?
I just do the zucchini.
All right, Barbara, thanks a lot. Now, Kelly, here in Wisconsin, you know, we've got a lot of zucchini at certain points of the year. It's where you're trying to figure out how to use all the zucchini. Do you have a favorite thing? You mentioned there was a dessert that zucchini shows up in for you, I think it was. What else do you like to do with your zucchini?
Yeah, so I absolutely love it. And to Barbara's point, the whole big thing with zucchini is you want to make sure that you're squeezing out as much of that moisture as possible. So after you grate it, you want to put it in a kitchen towel. You would be shocked. I mean, a cup of liquid will come out of it. And obviously that really offsets a recipe, especially when you're using it in baking. But I actually have a recipe for cinnamon chocolate chip scones. And scones, Rob, are notoriously dry and unflavored. So I found that by actually adding a good amount of grated zucchini, that you get a ton of moisture and you really don't taste it, but you get these gorgeous flecks of green from not peeling the zucchini. I always like to think too, kind of visually, what the finished dish is going to look like. So, and it's always fun too. It's a great conversation starter when you present something and you ask people to try and guess the secret ingredient. I mean, it's a great little icebreaker if you're doing a dinner party or even just cooking for your family. So they'll spot the green thing in there and say maybe mint or basil or I don't know. But zucchini is fantastic in chocolate chip scones.
Barbara, thanks for calling in. We're talking to Kelly Senier, author of The Secret Ingredient Cookbook. Let's check out another recipe you shared with us, WPR.org/Food Friday. People can check that out. This is a chicken cutlets with apple salad, and the secret ingredient is graham crackers.
Oh, yes. Yes. So my dad is from Budapest, Hungary, immigrated here in 1956. So Wiener Schnitzel was one of the first things I ever learned how to cook from my Hungarian grandmother. And it was a very classic breadcrumb breading on the Wiener Schnitzel. We would do either chicken or turkey or pork. And that breadcrumb mixture kind of evolved over the years, and we would use panko and Italian seasoned and everything else. So when I knew I had to include a cutlet or a Wiener Schnitzel recipe in the book as homage to my dad and my Hungarian roots. So I started playing around with different breadcrumbs, and graham crackers are fantastic as a breading in savory form. Especially again, when you salt it after, right after you pan fry it, there's just a touch of honey and sweetness in them. So it really balances out the savoriness of the dish. And that one's paired with an apple salad. So apples with honey and graham crackers and this juicy chicken cutlet, it all comes together. And it's a great riff on kind of the traditional Hungarian one that I grew up on.
Now, you can't see my face right now, but this is the first one that's gotten my like, really? Kind of face so far.
Really, I promise. Like, these recipes were tested by so many people across the country. If there was even like a tinge of, but this is what I say, and I say it in the introduction in the book, like, trust me on this. Like, just trust me. I spent months researching and testing and developing these and feeding these recipes to my entire extended family and the home cooks that made them across the country and my poor husband, who was the ultimate guinea pig, for better or for worse. they have been tested very thoroughly.
All right, well, I always have graham crackers around, so I'll probably try that sometime.
Go.
All right. Was there anything, you mentioned the pickle juice margaritas as one that didn't work out. Were there any dishes where you found, you know what, these are pretty much just fine as they are. They don't need a secret ingredient.
I did find that a lot, and it's interesting. Sometimes I would like overdo it. You know, you're trying to think like, you don't want it to be gimmicky. Like, there was no point in making this gimmicky. I didn't want this to be like a make you search through your whole pantry and find something super, like putting black beans in, you know, pancakes or something super weird. I wanted everything to kind of pique the interest and then encourage people to continue making them. But I did do a fried, you have to stay with me here, Rob. It's fried rice pudding. So I made rice pudding. I chilled it down. I cut it out with cookie cutters. I breaded it with crushed up Cinnamon Toast Crunch cereal, which is my favorite cereal of all time. And then I deep fried it. And by the time I'd done this, it was like 36 years later. And I was like, nobody in their right mind is going to do this. Rice pudding is so creamy and delicious as is. Enough. Time out. This one's done, guys.
It's out.
The team. I was like, we're done with this one. It goes in the rejects folder, maybe another book down the line, but not in this one. Everything's got to be family friendly in like 30 minutes.
Excellent. Kelly, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
That's Kelly Senye, chef and founder of JustATaste.com. She talked to us about her new book, The Secret Ingredient Cookbook, 125 family-friendly recipes with surprisingly tasty twists. You can find some of the recipes we talked about today over at WPR.org/Food Friday. What do we got? The strawberry galette with whipped cream, the chicken cutlets with apple salad, graham crackers in there, pancakes with strawberry syrup, champagne, the secret ingredient in that batter. Again, WPR.org/Food Friday. Monday on the Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, call in to share the issue that's most important to you in your local community. Kate wants to hear from you. That's Monday morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. We were just talking about secret ingredients in food. Here's one that goes even further. A secret food ingredient in a diamond ring. Ranch dressing powder. Hidden Valley, makers of ranch dressing, commissioned a lab-made 2-carat diamond made of ranch powder that was subjected to extreme pressure and temperature in a lab over the course of 5 months. So they've got a ranch dressing diamond ring. They put it up for auction on eBay with proceeds going to a food relief charity. So how much was a ranch diamond ring worth to somebody? The bidding closed yesterday with a winning bid of $12,500. What do you do with a $12,000 ranch dressing ring? One, you can't eat it, or you shouldn't anyhow. Two, will it be an engagement ring? That's up to the auction winner and whoever they want to marry. But maybe they're more into blue cheese or Thousand Island. I don't know. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, on the Friday News Roundup this week, President Biden calls Vladimir Putin a war criminal. Congress delivers on some, but not all, of the requests made by Ukraine's president. And COVID surges again in Europe. It's all coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss met at the state capitol Wednesday with conservative activists trying to persuade him to decertify the results of the 2020 presidential election. Voss has continued to walk a fine line between saying there were problems with the election in the state and empowering different people to continue investigating it, but dismissing as impossible the idea that Wisconsin could somehow claw back its electoral votes for President Biden. We're going to talk about what happened during and after Wednesday's meeting and how it's affecting Voss's standing in the Republican Party in the state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the ongoing calls from some Republicans to try to decertify the 2020 presidential election outcome here in the state? Do you want Assembly Speaker Robin Voss to pursue that, or do you think he's right not to? What do you think of his claim that there was widespread fraud, though, in that election? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson was at the Capitol Wednesday covering all this. Sean, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rob.
Set the stage for us. It's kind of an unusual meeting, a couple of meetings for Robin Voss on Wednesday.
I'd say it's very unusual, especially given the adversarial relationship right now between Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who has been, you know, in power in the state legislature for a while now, and this segment of the GOP base that has kind of declared him public enemy number one. So for Voss to agree to meet with those people and at the Capitol in a kind of public way is not your typical day at the Capitol.
It wasn't a public meeting exactly, though. This is a closed door thing, and not everybody who wanted to be in there was in there. Can you talk about that?
It was a closed door thing that was arranged by Voss. So it was in a committee room at the Capitol, but it was publicized by the people who got to have an audience with the speaker. So by the people who want to decertify the election. And that group includes State Representative Tim Rantham, who is running for governor in Wisconsin, kind of on this platform of his resolution to decertify the state's election. He showed up for the start of the meeting, and Speaker Voss promptly told him to get out of the room, that it was his meeting. And, you know, Rantham kind of made a big deal of that out in the hallway there, talking to reporters, said it was another example in his mind of obstruction.
I want to give a listen to Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker Voss, speaking after that meeting at the Capitol. Here's some of an exchange with a reporter talking about the calls to decertify the election and the issue of alleged fraud.
What they spent much of the time talking about, that's a private conversation, but basically they are trying to convince us of the fraud that occurred. I already believe there was fraud that occurred. The challenge is we now need to have an attorney general and a governor who will sign legislation and fight with us to make sure that the election in 2022 and 2024 is fair. We don't have the ability to unilaterally overturn the election. Just that can't happen.
Do you think there was widespread fraud or just a few instances?
I think there was widespread fraud. And I think we are going to see more and more data that comes out as Justice Gabelman continues his investigation.
Okay, that was seen as a significant line, Sean. Assembly Speaker Voss saying he thinks there was widespread fraud. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say for certain that Speaker Voss has never uttered those words, but it seems like a line that he hasn't crossed in the past couple years, even during all this discussion of the 2020 election, because he knows that multiple reviews have shown there was not widespread fraud. The state's nonpartisan legislative audit bureau did a review of Wisconsin's election, found there was not widespread fraud, found instances where it said that the Wisconsin Elections Commission should have, you know, gotten the legislature's okay to set a variety of election policies, but that there was not widespread fraud. The conservative Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty did a review of Wisconsin's election, found there was not widespread fraud. We've had recounts here, the normal canvassing process, several court decisions. And so this record of review of the election is pretty well known, and Speaker Voss is pretty well familiar with it. And he has not used those terms, you know, to my ear, to describe the election. But coming out of this meeting, which, you know, he was shouted at on his way out of the meeting by a couple people there who said, toss Robin Voss. And in that context, he was asked about it. You heard there whether there was widespread fraud. And he says there was.
Talking to WPR Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, looking at calls from some in the Republican Party to decertify the 2020 presidential election results in Wisconsin. and the assembly speaker's response to that. Now, Sean, we heard Speaker Voss say this is something we can't do. And this is, to be clear, this is not an issue where some legal experts say you can't do it. Some say you can. But it seems like everybody agrees the legislature doesn't have that power. A few attorneys behind this effort contest that. But the consensus seems to be this is a power they don't have.
The consensus, yeah, the legislature's nonpartisan attorneys say no. I think you'd safe to say a very wide range of election law experts say you cannot do this. There is an attorney that former President Trump has relied on to make this argument in the first place, who has kind of latched on to Wisconsin's movement and is saying that it's possible. But that is, you know, an outlier in terms of what lawyers, what election law experts say about decertification. So Speaker Voss has been pretty forceful on that and did not budge on that after this meeting, said it's not possible. But I think the people who got the meeting with Voss were happy with the rest of it, happy to hear him say the words widespread fraud, and happy that they got an audience with the powerful Speaker of the Wisconsin Assembly.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jerry is with us in Racine. Jerry, hi.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Jerry?
Well, Robin is a smart man, and he knows this is all nonsense. And I thought he had more ethics and backbone than how he's playing this. And long term, my guess is they'll eat him alive anyway, because unless you go completely over the edge, there's nothing that will keep these people happy.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Sean, can you talk about the calls you mentioned? Protesters there saying toss Voss. Some Republican county party leaders have said Robin Voss should step down, at least from leadership. How widespread is that movement, as far as we can tell?
So I think within the legislature, Robin Voss, at least from what we can tell, has a pretty good position. You know, he's widely supported by elected lawmakers in the Republican caucus of the state assembly. And, you know, when there have been efforts to pass resolutions to like censure him or kick him out as speaker, like at the last state GOP convention last year, those just don't go anywhere. And so I think there's a case to be made that this is a small but vocal minority that's going after Voss in this way. But it's pretty relentless, and it does have a pretty powerful backer in former President Donald Trump, who continues to issue statements criticizing Voss and staying on him to do stuff that Voss doesn't want to do. You know, Trump continues to say, you can decertify. And, you know, Donald Trump, as far as we know, it is still basically the leader of the Republican Party in the United States. And, you know, he doesn't want this to go away at all. So in one sense, the people who were at this meeting and who continue to push for Voss to step down and say he's the problem are not carrying power in the state Republican Party. And at the same time, they have the most powerful voice in Republican politics today, Donald Trump, on their side.
Sean, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Sean Johnson, WPR Capitol Bureau Chief, with us to talk about his reporting at a meeting Wednesday at the state capitol between Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and conservative activists trying to decertify Wisconsin's 2020 presidential election. We'll stay with the topic, talking to former conservative talk radio host Charlie Sykes for his take on Voss and the speaker's position in the Republican Party. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about Assembly Speaker Robin Voss after a meeting earlier this week at the state capitol, activists pushing him to decertify Wisconsin's 2020 presidential election. He said repeatedly, citing numerous legal experts, can't do that. But he did tell a reporter after the meeting he believes there was widespread fraud in Wisconsin's election. Multiple studies so far have shown that not to be the case. Former President Trump was listening, released a statement condemning Voss for not moving to somehow overturn Wisconsin's vote. Where does Voss find himself now politically in this moment? Charlie Sykes was a longtime conservative talk radio host at WTMJ in Milwaukee. Charlie's the founder and editor-at-large of The Bulwark, a conservative political journal. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here. Thank you.
All right. So Assembly Speaker Voss saying, no, we can't overturn this election. Yeah, there was widespread fraud. What do you think of the position he's in now?
Well, first of all, I've known Robin for a very, very long time. And you got a caller just a few minutes ago. I think actually nailed it. Robin Voss is a very, very smart guy. But I think he's grossly miscalculating here. I think that he thinks that somehow he can straddle straddle this particular issue, and he's not able to do it. Look, he knows there was not widespread fraud. He knows that's a lie. And yet he feels the need somehow to appease this this Trumpist base. And they are unappeasable. So I mean, give you a little bit of perspective on all of this. I think this goes back to Reince Priebus's approach to Republican politics when he was chairman here in Wisconsin. He was very close friends with Robin Voss. And they always prided themselves on not having a split between the, say, the establishment and the Tea Party and the various other, you know, groups. So I think that what Robin Voss has been trying to do is, you know, can you keep the baby alligator in the bathtub by just throwing it a little bit of red meat and hoping that it won't grow and get out and begin eating you? And I don't think it's working out for him well.
What would you have liked to have seen from Robin Voss and other Republican leaders since the first claims of fraud? I mean, that started, I guess, in summer 2016, but especially after the election in 2020, after all the votes were counted in here, the first claims of fraud were being made. What would you have liked to have seen then?
Them to tell the truth, to stand up, show some backbone, and say, look, you may not have liked the outcome of this election, but you lost, and let's move on, to be able to do that, which I believe Robin Voss knows and thinks. Look, a few months ago, the election deniers were a very, very small little caucus within his larger caucus, maybe headed by Janelle Branchen and a handful of others. And yet, rather than ignore them or isolate them, he decided to empower them by going off on this half-cocked, incredibly expensive clown car of an investigation being run by former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman. And as a result of that, what's happened is that he's fed this fire. I also think Sean made a great point here. Probably a very small minority of Republicans who are, you know, all hair on fire about this, but they are being cheered on by Donald Trump. And like so many other Republicans around the country, Robin Voss knows it's a lie, but he just does not have the intestinal fortitude to go up against or challenge Donald Trump. And that's why he finds himself in this awkward position that he does today.
Before we go to our callers, it's a midterm election year. Charlie, what would you like to have Republicans focusing on months out from an election?
Well, I mean, I think that Republicans should be focusing on, first of all, their own agenda. I mean, this is the irony here. They think that the winds are at their back, that they have this is a midterm election that's likely to be very favorable to Republicans. And if they talked about their issues, I think they're reasonably confident that they could win. But instead, every day that goes by that this continues, they are not talking about those issues. They're looking back. So I also think that Republicans ought to make it very, very clear that when they get the governorship and the attorney generalship, if they do, that they will absolutely not use that power to overturn the popular vote in the 2024 election. This is something that they need to be much clearer about, because I'm concerned about access to the voting booth, but I'm actually much more concerned with whether or not there is going to be this movement to have legislatures and governors somehow thwart the will of the electorate and steal the election that way. This doesn't seem to me to be hard. It seems a relatively easy thing for Robin Voss and Republican candidates for governor to do, to say, no, we will respect the outcome of the election. We are not going to mess with the election. We are not going to associate ourselves with the people who are responsible with the January 6th coup. We are not going to be listening to people like John Eastman, one of the architects of the coup, who has been pushing them to decertify this election. And it's I guess the word that kept coming to mind as I was listening to your reporting was how pathetic the position that they've chosen for themselves is.
Talking to Charlie Sykes from The Bulwark about calls to overturn the 2020 presidential election results in Wisconsin and how it all fits into Republican politics in the state. Let's go to your calls now. Nate starts us off in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi, thank you for having me. I am one of the thousands of Wisconsin voters. Back in 2020, they actually tried to steal my vote after the election and have it thrown out. And thankfully, the judges were more sensible than that. I only voted once, by the way, and I did so honestly. I think that this is Robin Voss being willing to push a lie and then getting caught by it because either there was fraud or there wasn't. And it's made worse by that he can't really claim to be for honesty in elections when he is one of the people that helped push the gerrymandering problems that we have in Wisconsin today.
Nate, thanks for the call. We've got a lot of callers. I want to jump in. Yeah. Charlie, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with him. You know, that Robin Voss, could have been kind of he could have been a bulwark against some of this craziness. But he's basically chosen to go in with a lie. So he figures that I can embrace the lie without embracing the consequences of the lie. And he's finding out that that's an untenable position. Look, Robin Voss is a very powerful political figure. I think he has the support of the vast majority of Republican members of the state legislature. But having said that, his actions make it look like he's looking over his shoulder and he looks weak. Rather than using his power to stand up for the truth and to push back against the lies, he's given them more ammunition. So this is not one where you can say, okay, you have the crazies out there versus the more rational Republicans, because the rational Republicans on Earth 2.0 would still be crazy. So it's basically, big lie or bigger lie in Wisconsin right now.
Nate, thanks for the call. Tom joins us now in Port Wing. Tom, hi.
Hello. Yes, I just want to say that I have worked many elections as an election inspector, and not so much widespread fraud, but widespread inequity is the problem. And I'm going to explain it this way. If somebody votes in person, they had to present an ID. If you voted by mail, you did not. We have seen this exponential growth from less than 4% to almost 40% of the ballots coming in the mail. That's the problem. That is constitutionally a error, because you have to have voting the same playing field for people who vote in person as mail-in. That's what created this problem. And rather than address the real issue, there's all this name calling and calling people who disagree with the outcome of the election, who want to point out some of the inequities, that we cannot have another election where when you vote and I vote, we have two different standards.
Gotcha. That's Tom, thanks problem. For the call. Tom referring to for people who claim to be indefinitely defined because of COVID, you can be exempted from that ID requirement for mail-in. You don't make that claim. You have to provide ID at some point in the process, Charlie. Are there things you think need to be fixed or clarified or streamlined or made equal for everybody, as Tom was saying?
Well, I think there are legitimate issues you could make to tinker around the edges. I've always been a supporter of voter ID, but I think it's very, very clear, and this needs to be stated as clearly as possible, that this inequity that he described did not affect the outcome of the election and is not a justification for denying the legitimacy of this election, and is certainly not the grounds for Wisconsin to do something that is both illegal and unconstitutional, which is to decertify the election. So by all means, let's work on making this, making it as easy as possible for as many people to vote and protect the integrity of the ballot box. But this idea somehow that we should overturn the election because you didn't like some of these rules is frankly disingenuous.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Martha joins us next in Menominee. Martha, hello.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. It's an honor to speak with your guest today. Highly respect him. I'm at the opposite end of the political spectrum, but I respect your guest for speaking the truth. My question is, do you think that since the elected officials in our state don't seem to have the intestinal fortitude, as your guest says, do you think a lawsuit like what Minocqua Brewing is doing to Ron Johnson and Tom Tiffany, and I believe Mr. Fitzgerald, do you think a similar lawsuit addressing Mr. Gabelman's deceptive business practices
would be a successful way to address this.
Martha, oh, go ahead, Charlie.
Okay, I'm not familiar with the legal ins and outs of that, and I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want to give any legal opinions here. But I think that ultimately, this is something that's going to have to be decided by the electorate. I think that there are various challenges to the subpoenas that that Gableman has issued, but ultimately, I think there's going to have to be a political solution to all of this. And I do think Republicans like Robin Voss need to be held accountable for the amount of money that they have wasted in this absolutely absurd fake investigation. And also, I hope that people understand that what's going on here in Wisconsin. I mean, nationally, Wisconsin Republicans are a laughingstock. We have really beclowned ourselves with all of this. And I don't know how long this is going to go on or how much money it's going to cost the taxpayers, but people shouldn't put up with it.
Charlie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's Charlie Sykes, founder and editor-at-large of The Bulwark, a conservative political journal, longtime talk radio host here in Wisconsin. We talked to him today about calls to somehow overturn Wisconsin's 2020 presidential election results and what it means for the Republican Party here in the state. Coming up Monday on Central Time, we'll find out why student loan payments might get deferred again, and the Northern Lights would be a cool thing to see, but I've never seen them. We'll get advice on our best chances to see them in the Midwest. That and more Monday here on Central Time.